Hi, this is Allison Sheridan of the No Silicast podcast, hosted at podfeet.com, a technology geek podcast with an ever so slight Macintosh bias. Today is Sunday, April 17th, 2011, and this is show number 308. We have an extremely special guest in the house today, and when I say in the house, I mean in the house. And it's not a stalker like Listener James or anything like that. It's actually Shai Yamini. How are you doing tonight, Shai?
I'm great, thanks, Allison. Really good.
This is pretty fun. We actually, with the help of Mark Dalton, we were able to get both my video and Shai's up on the camera. So this is pretty exciting. We're broadcasting both into Ustream. So, you know, I got really behind this week, and I know Steve says, Allison, you're always saying you're behind, but I was too busy borking up my brand new MacBook Pro to get a lot done earlier in the week. When last we left our hero, she had swapped her optical drive for the SSD, the solid-state drive, from her old MacBook Pro into the new MacBook Pro just 3 hours before showtime. You know, it was fun. I thought that was a great idea. I thought everything worked fine, but on Monday, I noticed that I couldn't send email from any of my three accounts. Assuming I was at fault and I'd boogered something up, I spent hours deleting, re-adding, double-checking those accounts, making sure the passwords were there, the incoming, the outgoing servers were all right, deleting the plist for mail, everything just over and over again. Since the Mac.com email, though, is sort of self-configured, it dawned on me partway through this that maybe it isn't actually my fault. I searched message boards, tweeted, and finally in desperation, after 2 days of fiddling with it, I ended up doing a live chat with Apple on Tuesday night. My little friend Chris got online, and we had a sporting good time of it. I told him right off the bat that I was a Mac podcaster, so, you know, go quickly. And, you know, sometimes you get the guys that are just, you know, they start over at the very beginning going, okay, take your mouse, go up to the Apple. But this guy wasn't like that. He went immediately into full speed mode and actually went a little faster than I could, actually. But after quite a while, the only real progress we made was when he said, why don't you switch to a clean account, let Mac.com set itself up, and then try to send. And that worked fine. So after 45 minutes, he told me he had no other tricks up his sleeve to try and that I'd have to call AppleCare. I do sort of have to confess that I never told him I'd crack the case open and put that SSD in, or that I was pointing the SSD towards the hard drive for the user account. It's possible that if I'd confessed that, he'd have either refused to help or actually been able to help me. So I can't really blame Apple, that's for sure, because I didn't tell them all the interesting bits of it. Of course, my next move was not to call AppleCare. It was to enlist the help of the Mac Roundtable crew. Katie came up with an interesting thought. She suggested that it sort of sounded like a permissions issue. Now, I thought a little bit along those lines. I'd run disk permission several times from Disk Utility, and I was having some other odd problems here and there with other applications where it didn't seem to have write privileges in some applications, so I'd have to open the applications, do a git info, and say, yeah, I have permissions for that. But I wasn't really sure what to do about those other than changing the folder and file permissions manually, you know, over in that git info window. Then Bart joined in the fun, and he was actually able to crack the code. Evidently, when you first create a user account, it's assigned a user ID or UID number. The first time I did this SSD swap on my old machine, the first account I had created on both machines was named Allison, hence they had the same UID of 501. When I did it on the new MacBook Pro, though, I thought I'd cleverly create my clean admin account first and create the Allison account second. That meant that Allison on the hard drive was 501, but Allison on the solid-state drive was 502, and pretty much never the twain shall meet. He sent me off to the terminal where he had me issue the change owner command, or chown, C-H-O-W-N. Change owner must be invoked as an administrator, so you use the sudo, I guess they call it, or superuser do command to give it your root password. So the command becomes sudo chown space dash capital R, Allison, tilde, Allison, slash. Now, that capital R in the middle means recursively, so basically it says everything in Allison should be the same user, the same owner as the other Allison. Now, to be sure, to be honest, I actually don't know which Allison is which in that plot in the string of commands, but I do understand that it meant to make them the same owner. Right after that, mail was right as rain. The only problem was that it was Thursday afternoon before I got sorted out with Bart's help, so I had a lot of work to do in just a couple of days. I started taking digital photos pretty much when digital cameras were first getting popular, and for years and years and years, I kept my photos in a nice anal folder structure. I'm telling you, Alistair Jenks would have been proud of my structure. Well, eventually I moved them all into Aperture, and it was actually this folder structure that drove me there rather than iPhoto, because iPhoto doesn't support any kind of embedded folders. I have my folders structured chronologically with years and months and days and the folder names, and then the final folder with a good bit of detail of what was in it, like mom's birthday, for example. When I dragged the top-level folder into Aperture, it kept all of that beautiful structure for me, but unfortunately, it brought it in as one giant project. The downside of that is you can't search by folder name, at least in any way that I can find. So all that detailed naming I did to make the folders easy to find was useless to me. What you can do, though, is to create folders with projects in them. So I can navigate through folders because I know it was in 2002, and then the projects have the names in them, so I can search for them that way, too. The only downside of this is that it meant moving the contents of every single folder into projects of the same name. That sounds tedious, but easy enough, right? Oh no, that's not the way Aperture rolls. It turns out that you have to do about 9 different steps that are completely unintuitive and convoluted and completely impossible to remember. First, you select the folder that where the pictures are. You select all images in the folder. You right-click on the folder name and choose New Project. Give the project the same name as the folder, click the Move Selected Items box, move project to the right folder, new location, and delete original folder. If you did it right, you won't get any scary warning saying something bad's going to happen. If you did it wrong, you're going to get some warnings, and it'll tell you you're about to lose everything, so you have to start over. Now, this is made even worse by the fact that Aperture tends to just screw up. Like, it'll show the folder where I moved everything, and it'll be empty. But if I quit and I go back in, the folder's actually got the photos in it. So, you know, it's a lot of fun. So I only get the energy to work on this every few months, knocking off, say, 20 or so folders a night for a few nights till I get bored and go back to work on other things for a while. Because of these big gaps and my inability to remember those 9 bizarre steps, I was completely doomed. Until I got the brilliant idea to record the steps in Screen Steps. Haha, tricked you into a Screen Steps ad, didn't I? You thought it was about photography. Well, anyway, once I got that idea, I knew I could drop it for a few weeks and just jump right back in, being careful to review my very simple Screen Steps document each time before I started to familiarize myself with the steps. I didn't even do any images or anything in there that time because it's just, you know, here's the steps. But it turns out it's a really useful way to remember things you need to know how to do. I find uses for Screen Steps every single week that save me time and aggravation. I'm sure you'll find it useful too, if only to prompt your own aging memory. And don't make fun of me. Whoever you are, your memory's aging too, just not as fast as mine. So head on over to screensteps.com and give Screen Steps Desktop a try for 30 days. I'm sure you're going to love it. So I'm going to take a quick break to say hi to Shai again. We've been having a lot of fun with the mics, haven't we?
We have indeed. A lot of fun.
We've been messing around with mics. We were getting an echo on his voice, and the people in the live chat said it was okay, but we decided to keep messing around until we changed everything, I think.
Yeah. We actually had a precursor echo.
Yeah. It was an echo ahead of his microphone, which we don't understand at all.
It was strange.
There was some physics. We had quite a thing. Oh, Mark Dalton wants us to sing the Friday song. I don't think
Friday
so.
Friday song? What is the Friday song?
Oh, my gosh. He doesn't know the Friday song. He's been out of the country on a ship. So it's quite an internet meme. I'll tell you about it when we're done. All right. Let's keep the show going here.
Dumb questions.
How come I always have to?
It's time for Dumb Question Corner.
Well, I put out the call for some dumb questions this week, and I got a couple of really good ones. The first one came through Twitter from Semi-Kate. She asked, can I watch podcasts not live? I want to see the chat, especially yours and the International Mac Podcast and Mac OS Ken. Probably a different answer for each one. Kate, this is a great question because I don't think I ever told people that you can watch my live show, not live, but you can watch it and see the chat. But let me get back into the answer and start in the order you asked the question. I contacted Stu Helm of the International Mac Podcast, hosted over at iampodcast.tv, to ask him how people can watch the IMP live, not live. It turns out they keep all of the interaction they have with the audience in the show. So when you listen to IMP, you do get it all. Well, not exactly all, because you don't get to see what people are typing during the live chat. But when I mentioned it to Stu, he said, maybe I'll noodle on a way to capture that too. Ken Ray of macOS Ken from macOSKen.com, my morning drive news show, has a live version too over on Ustream. You can watch his shows recorded by going to Ustream.tv and searching on macOS Ken, and as he says, look for the picture of him in a hat. I put a direct link in the show notes so you can go see it. The good news is you get to hear the live show that's not in the normal podcast feed or even in day six. The downside is that Ken doesn't actually record video or the live chat. It's purely audio when you go into the recorded shows. Again, it's more Ken goodness, and more Ken is a good thing, right? Well, and finally, the most important show you care the most about, the live NoSilicast. Just in case you haven't heard me yap about it, I do a live show on Sunday nights. In fact, I'm doing it live right as I'm saying this. And you can go watch it on podfeet.com/live at 5 p.m. Pacific time on Sunday nights. In the live show, you get to see video of me, video of my recording in GarageBand, which is kind of handy because the NoSilla castaways notice things like if I forget to hit record, and you get to see the live chat going by on screen while you're watching live. Now, tonight, we actually have Shai Yamini in the second video spot instead of GarageBand, so if I screw up, it's up to Shai to actually notice it. Nobody in the live chat can tell. But anyway, we complain a lot about Ustream because the ads are really intrusive when you first connect. But, you know, they give us this service that has actually never failed on us, and I don't pay them a dime. You don't pay them a dime, I don't pay them a dime. But even cooler, when I'm done with the show, we all say goodbye to the recorded peeps, and I hit save to save the show for future vetting, for future viewing. There's only one step I forgot in all of this. I never told you that you can watch the recorded live show. So, if you go to ustream.tv/channel/NoSilicast-Mac-podcast, and don't worry, of course, there's a link in the show notes to that. You can watch a high-definition recording of the show with me, for this one, Shai, and the live chat. You'll get to see Steve bringing me a beer at the beginning. You get to see me do the recording. You get to see me botch things up and do retakes. You get to see me react to the live audience, like last week when Steve pointed out that I'd said it was April 20th, our birthday, when indeed it was only April 10th. But best of all, you'll see the live chat going by to see all of the NoSilla castaways and their tomfoolery. You can see them yell save. You can see them ignore me entirely, even when I think I'm being most entertaining. Frequently, I stop recording and look at the chat and realize I have no clue what they've even been talking about, and usually they won't tell me. So, Kate, you asked a great question, and I'm glad you gave me the opportunity to tell people how they can enjoy the live show, even if they're in a time zone for which my show is less than favorable. Thanks for writing in. Pierre Bourgeois wrote in with another dumb question. Not quite as dumb as I'd hoped. It was a little bit tough. Here's what he said. I have a modem supplied by my DSL provider, Canadian Ma Bell, and a time capsule router. The Bell modem sends out a Wi-Fi signal, as does the router. Does the fact that a bunch of wireless networks being created, for example, Bell, time capsule, and guest network, dilute my wireless signal? My guess is no, but I was just wondering. Well, after hearing Pierre's question, I took a stab at answering it myself, but then I ran my answer by Bart to see if I got close. Luckily, he said I was on the right track, but as is Bart's talent and skill, he added some depth to the answer that I was missing. Having multiple wireless networks might cause some problems, so let's talk through each of those. What you could cause, if devices are not set up properly, is unnecessary confusion of your devices. For example, on Windows XP, there's a setting called Zero Wireless Config, where the Windows machine will try to find the strongest network available. This causes a lot of problems because maybe your neighbor's signal is actually stronger than any of yours. On the Mac, you can tell each device what its preferred network is through the network system preferences, clicking on Airport, and then Advanced. Once you're in there, you can add each of your 26 networks you set up, or only one, and you can even change the preferred order. I only keep my home router and my MiFi in that list. You can also choose whether to allow the device to ask to join new networks. In general, I keep that off on devices that I travel around with, like my iPad and iPhone, because otherwise I'm getting pop-ups all over the place when I'm driving around or I'm walking in and out of stores. My understanding of the ask to join networks thing is that the device's radio is being used constantly whenever it sees a network, that it keeps trying to connect to those networks. Where I work, there's a very strong Wi-Fi network that I'm not allowed to use, and I actually turn my Wi-Fi off on my iPad while at work because I can see the battery draining very quickly while it continues to try and join that network. Basically, if I keep it on, my iPad usually lasts about a day. If I keep it off and then turn it on when I'm back home, it'll last several days. I'd sure like to know if there's a way to stop that without turning Wi-Fi off. I wish there were a never try to connect to this network button. However, with all that said, purposely having all of these separate networks can cause some problems if they're all on the same channel. They'll actually bleed into each other, causing interference and inefficiencies in both devices. Wireless networking is swell for so many things, but there are inherent risks of people jumping on and botching things up for you. So minimizing the number of hotspots you create is certainly a good idea. Bart's advice was to first shut off the Wi-Fi signal from the ISP's router. That's just junk you don't need. The time capsule Wi-Fi will be everything you do need. Having a guest network is fantastic, so you don't have to let friends' potentially icky computers on your pristine protected network, but Bart suggests you keep it off most of the time and only turn it on when you need it. One other reason you want to separate your networks, though, and don't tell Bart I recommended this, is to separate your G devices, or worse, from your N devices. If you're watching Netflix streaming over your TiVo using the TiVo dongle that's only 802.11b, the whole time that movie's playing, all of the Macs on your network are going to slow down from G to speeds down to B. I hope that helps. As always, I learned something from Dumb Question Corner. Every week lately, I've spouted off how many characters in Text Expander from Smile saves me. You know how I love a good metric or statistic. Well, last week, Quality Control Director Steve had the audacity to suggest that I was misstating the stats, or rather that Smile was misreporting the statistics. He said he was willing to bet that they didn't count the characters you did type in order to trigger the long string of text. Well, I set out to prove him wrong. I brought up Text Expander, and it said that I had saved 141,097 characters so far this year. I typed capital S, semicolon, which is three characters, and it expanded out the word screen steps, as I taught it to, which is 11 characters. I looked at the stats again, and it said 141,105 characters saved, which is an increase in characters saved of 8, which, if my ciphering is correct, is 11 minus 3. So, QA Director Steve, Text Expander does accurately reflect your characters saved. If you hate to waste time, or if you're worried about or already have repetitive stress in your hands, then head on over to smilesoftware.com and get yourself a copy of Text Expander from Smile. Ken Wolf, good friend, an apologist for Professor Albert, sent in a review I know you'll really enjoy.
Hi, Allison. This is Ken Wolf from Manhattan Repertory Theater in New York City, manhattanrep.com, and I'm here with something a little different. It's a review of a theatrical Mac application that I just recently put to use. Before we talk about the application, let's talk about the problem that needs to be solved. I just recently represented my one-man show, The People in My Hips, which is the true story of how I developed severe post-traumatic stress disorder and more from training in yoga, believe it or not, and how, after 3 years, I cured myself. It's a intense, highly dramatic, personal tale, which received just awesome, awesome, amazing reviews when we first did it in 2009. When I originally presented this play, it had, I believe, 35 sound cues and maybe 60 light cues. It's been 2 years since I did the show. This version now had 78 sound cues and 94 light cues. These sound and light cues were intrinsic to the production. They needed to be seamless. Because our budget is never very huge here at Manhattan Rep, I only had one technician. The sound was actually almost another actor in the play. There were scenes where I actually talked to voices, and also there were moments when the sound needed to come which would trigger emotional moments in me. So how the hell could we do this? Sound and lights, a million cues, and make it seamless and make it work. QLab to the rescue. QLab, created by Figure 53, that can be found at figure53.com, is an award-winning Mac universal software that makes it simple to do tech for live shows and more. And the cool thing, if you're just doing sound as we were, QLab is absolutely free. God bless America. Because we only worked with the free version of QLab, that is what I will be covering today. When one first opens QLab, it looks sort of like a conventional Mac application. There's a toolbar across the top, and then on the left, a list of actions and different types of cues which is called the toolbox. In the center, you'll find the area where the sound files are imported, drag and drop, and where the different actions from the toolbox are integrated with the sound files, creating the sound design for a particular show. I hope that makes sense. Down across the bottom, when active, is the inspector, which customizes the various sound cues above, info, volume level, loop actions, and more. Please know that all the sound cues for a particular show need to be stored on the Mac that you're using even after you import them to QLab. QLab just accesses the files from your hard drive, so be sure not to delete them or move them somewhere else once you have imported them to QLab and set up your sound design. Otherwise, you will lose it, which is so not fun, especially when you have a live show to do. At first feel, QLab is not intuitive. I had to ask my tech director for some help when I first journeyed into QLab, but once you understand how it works, it's a breeze to set up sound cues, a breeze to layer the sound cues, to set up automatic sound fades and crossfades, and set up time stops and even more. Once all the sound cues are more or less programmed, a simple tap on the space bar starts a cue, thus making it easy for one technician to run sound and lights at the same time. The challenge we had was that in a number of the scenes in my one-man play, we had multi-layered sound cues that had to be triggered exactly when I reached an emotional moment. If the sound cue wasn't there or wrong, the emotional moment would become cheesy and amateurish, and especially since I was the only one on stage, these sound cues, they had to work. QLab made it easy. Easy. We had over 180 cues in an 80-minute show, and it was seamless. Technology actually helped connect emotion to the audience. Isn't that cool? Technology and emotion. I love it. Just for fun, anyone could use QLab to run music at a party with sound fades, voiceovers coming in, and on-demand sounds and things like that. So even if you're not involved in the theater, please check out the free version of QLab because you could have some real, real fun with it. The pro version of QLab retails for $249, which also integrates video and has like 48 independent channels of audio out, and it just has a whole bunch of crazy, wonderful, amazing tech features. Maybe one day when my one-man show, The People in My Hips, makes it to Broadway, I'll do a review on the pro version. That would be cool. This is Ken Wolf from Manhattan Repertory Theater in New York City. And remember, with technology and with the theater, play is the thing.
So I have a unique opportunity right here. After listening to Ken's review, I realized I don't actually understand what he's talking about here. I don't get it. My only experience with theater was when I tried out for the school musical Oklahoma in 1976, and we're not going to go into that again. But so what is he talking about? How I don't understand the use of this.
Well, basically, there's a link between the sound guy and the for him solo performer. So He says a line, and that's a cue for the sound person to activate this sound cue.
So, like lightning in the background, thunder, I should say, in the background. I did it again.
Yeah,
something
exactly.
Like that.
Yeah, so that he says a sentence on a certain word. He needs a sound that he can react to, and he also would use the sound that let's say he's walking somewhere. A sound cue happens, and then he can react to that sound cue for the next part.
So wouldn't you just use some tool, I mean, like, you know, GarageBand or whatever, or Logic or something like that, where you just have all these tracks stacked up? Why would you need this tool?
It probably wouldn't be as instantaneous. With this sort of program as well, it'd just be more visually easy.
Okay.
And so you can actually have, this is this one section of the play, this is another section. I don't think it would actually necessarily have to work as...
Looking at visual. Oh, okay, because it's not really a timeline. It's this one, then this one, then this one.
Exactly. It's more like a lighting cue where they go, okay, 15 minutes and 35 seconds into this, we need this lighting cue.
Why? That free sounds a little inexpensive.
Free is fantastic. I mean, I was just saying that this would work beautifully for live dance performance.
Oh, cool.
So you can actually visually put in drums or visually... So you don't have to necessarily dance to music. You can dance to sound effects.
Oh, interesting,
That would work really well as well.
Well, this certainly helped having you here to explain it, because I was trying to think, what do I say cleverly after something that I have no idea what he's talking about? I mean, it sounded neato, and I sure did like the idea of free, but...
yeah, I'm definitely downloading this.
Oh.
I'm going to have to get this one, I think.
Very cool, very cool. A while ago, Steve and I had the pleasure of hanging out with Robert Lockman of PhotographyInTheMac.com and his lovely wife, Lorelei. In fact, it was fantastic. She let me wax her car. It was a little disappointing because it was only a couple year old BMW. And I like to have cars that are like 10, 15, 20 years old that have been neglected. Unfortunately, this car was in good shape, which was unfortunate. But she told me during the waxing job, which, by the way, she insisted on helping with and Bob pretended to help with. She mentioned that they were going to give this car to her daughter. And she said she was going to get herself a new car. She told me that she was going to highly consider getting a Honda or an Acura because then they could have Honda Bob take care of their car. Now, how smart are they? I thought that was a grand idea. So if you live in the LA or Orange County areas, and on the top of the list, you should be putting Honda Bob or Hondas or Acuras as a model change so you too can have in-driveway care of your car by the famous, the intergalactically famous Honda Bob. Give him a call at 562-531-2321 or send him an email at hdabob@aol.com. HDA Bob's mobile service is not affiliated with Honda Acura or Honda Worldwide. The big story this week was that WordPress.com was actually compromised. If you're not in the WordPress game, let me make sure you catch the subtlety here. I'm sure you've heard me talk about it before. WordPress.com is the place where you can have your blog slash website hosted for free or pay for more functionality and flexibility. Normally, when I talk about WordPress, I'm talking about the open source software that you can download and install on your self-hosted web service. The main advantage of WordPress.com is that you don't have to worry about doing the security updates yourself. WordPress.com takes care of all of that for you. That is, until they get compromised themselves. Over on msnbc.msn.com, there was a pretty good article outlining what happened. The main thing I got out of it was that if you use the same login for all of your WordPress sites, then you're in danger, because they probably got that password. Yeah, about that. I sort of had the same login for every one of my WordPress sites, both the one I run on WordPress.com and the four standalone installations. Well, that's a good thing about having to do Security Lite by myself. I can't tell you guys to go fix something if I haven't done it myself. I went out and went to all four of my websites and five of my websites. Four? I can't remember. There's a whole slew of them. And fixed them all up, put in all unique passwords. While I was in there, I ran the WordPress 3.1.1 update, so everything is up to date now. Now, Microsoft did go ahead with the giant security update we talked about last week, so be sure to let not only your Windows machines, but your virtual machines and Office on the Mac and Office on Windows all run their updates. Now, Apple didn't really want to be left behind, so check out Software Update for OS X, because there was a big security update there, too. Now, I don't know if it was a big one, but there was one. Also, plug in your iPhones and iPads and ask for the OS updates there, too. I know they say all of this is supposed to run automatically, but it's been 2 days since the OS X security update came out, and I did not get it automatically. It didn't pop up. When I plugged in my iDevices this weekend, iTunes told me I didn't need an update, and it would check again in a couple of days. But when I forced it to check, sure enough, it found iOS security update 4.3.2. All right, enough vegetables. Let's have some fun. Well, it's that time of the week again. It's time for chit-chat across the pond. And this time, we've got to be able to declare some pond here because I have Shai Yamini in person in my actual backyard. How are you doing today, Shai?
I'm great. Thank you very much.
So, Shai, you're literally fresh off the boat here, right? You just docked down in the Bahamas?
Yep. Just flew in this morning, left the Bahamas at 4:30 in the morning, and literally just got off the plane and came here.
And we pretended we were making you dinner, but we really want you to work for your dinner, right?
That's fine.
I even promised I'd go easy on you when I heard how early you got up. But for those of you who don't remember, Shai is the one who came on and told us about, $2,000 worth of plugins for Photoshop and was it Logic or an Aperture?
Yes, Logic Pro and Aperture, the ones I work with mainly.
So that was a lot of fun. But now trying to figure out, Shai works on as a singer on a cruise line, right?
Yes, I work with Princess Cruises, and I'm currently on the ship Grand Princess.
And the Grand Princess is having some repairs to her body, huh?
Some major repairs. She's basically being gutted and a whole new atrium put in. The outside's being completely refitted. There's 15,000 workers on there right now.
Wow. So that's going to be beautiful when you get back on then, right?
It's incredible. Yeah. It's going to be a whole new ship. So,
what I wanted to talk to you about today was, being such a tech geek that you are, and I don't believe I've ever met anybody who had as well-developed right and left brains as you. You don't carry much gear with you on the ship, do you?
Oh, no. I travel light.
I carried your briefcase, Shai. So, what's your main machine you carry with you?
Okay, I've got a 15-inch MacBook Pro. It's, I think it's a late 2000, or it's a 2010 model, early 2010. I carry that with me. I've got, let me see, what do I have? I've got 4 hard drives with me, 2 Western Digitals.
Oh my gosh, these things are huge. We're pulling out so these are the, look like the Western Digital MyBooks.
Yep, both of them are 1 terabyte. So I've got 2 1 terabyte Western Digital MyBooks. I've got 2 500 gigabytes Samsung hard drives.
Just but those open. Are bare drives.
Yeah, these are bare drives.
Is that the recommended way to carry them? He is literally holding a bare drive. No static bag. No, he's just carrying them. They're thrown in his case here.
I got up early. It was 4:30.
You're lucky you got pants on at this point, right? So why this many drives?
Well, with all the video editing that I'm doing, I just tend to have a lot of stuff, as well as the photos as well, because I shoot mainly RAW. So, for example, I just did some photos from some of the shows, and I think I was averaging around about 20 to 30 gigs per show, and there were 5 shows.
Oh my gosh, yeah. That's crazy. So what camera are you using?
I'm currently using the 5D Mark II, the Canon. And
Are what, 12 megapixel photos?
21 megapixel.
Oh my gosh. So you were very polite earlier when I was talking about my huge audio files, weren't you? You didn't even mock me for that.
Well, yeah, I mean, the video and images tend to get really large.
So what are you doing video of?
Well, I used to do videos of shows. At the moment, I'm using my 5D to shoot HD video of just around when I'm on the shore or around the ship. Thing is, they're all massive files. So I think I get 40 minutes for 16 gigabytes.
Oh, wow. And that's on the Mark...
Yep, Canon Mark 5D Mark II.
So that's on compact flash, I think you said earlier, right?
Yes, they're on the compact flash cards, and it can gets recorded in QuickTime MOV files.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, which I can, when I put them into Final Cut, I can put them into Apple Intermediary Codec or up to ProRes. And I've seen some footage in the ProRes. I haven't done it personally because the files are ludicrously large.
I was going to say, that sounds like you to do that, though.
I tried it before, and I just ran out of space way too quickly. So.
Oh, I bet. Well, plus, that's you're working on a laptop, too.
Yeah, I'm pushing the limits of this. The new quad-core i7 MacBook Pros are looking
great. You mean like that one I have sitting right here?
Yes, I'm very jealous right now.
I'm glad to see you have the Invisus Shield on yours so we can tell them apart, so I don't just open mine up and all of a sudden it's gone, right?
The thought never crossed my mind.
No, I'm sure it didn't. So what are the bare hard drives? Do you have an enclosure or something?
No, I'm using them with the Q Voyager, or Voyager Q dock. So this one can take the full-size hard drives as well as the smaller laptop.
Okay, so this sort of looks like a mini toaster where you've got like the bagel size and maybe the small toast points going the other size.
Yep, it's even got a little thing here to take.
Oh
it out.
My gosh, it does look like a toaster. It's got a little eject thing. Steve's laughing in the other room. That's pretty interesting. I have never seen one of these. So it's about was about 4 or 5 inches by maybe 4 inches by maybe 3 inches tall, and it's got USB, eSATA. Firewire?
400 and 800.
Where's the 800? Oh, there it is. Yeah. There it is. There's the 800.
Yeah, they've got a 1394B.
Yes, I knew her well. Oh, I remember back when I used to have to use Firewire, now that I have Thunderbolt, right? And no drives to put into it.
Yeah. Well, that's the reason why I got this Voyager Q, is because it has all these plugs. So the MyBooks, Western Digital MyBooks, actually have eSATA out, so I can connect them via eSATA if I want the extra speed.
Okay, yeah. I've never used eSATA, but so If those are eSATA, then how are you getting into your laptop? Because it doesn't support eSATA.
Like Express Card adapter. I haven't got it with me, actually. But because my MacBook Pro is the older model, I've got the Express Card slot.
But that's a good thing for you, right?
It's brilliant. I couldn't function otherwise. With 16 gigs coming off my camera each time, going through USB 2 is horrifically painful.
Right, let's start it today and pick it up tomorrow, right?
Basically, yeah.
It's like getting film developed almost.
Yeah, exactly. You just like it's like watching like you know the old PCs when you watch them defrag.
I never knew about defragging until I saw a friend of mine, the Canadian guy, try to do it once. And he came to me and he said, "So I'm doing this defrag thing and it's been going 3 days. Is that normal?" And I said, "I don't know what defragging is," happily enough. So, so what's your workflow with these? You've got these 1 terabyte drives, but you've also got the 500 gig bare drives in the Voyager.
Yes. Well, I've got them all daisy chained via FireWire when I want them all running.
On the giant desk you have in the ship?
I'm lucky. I've actually got a fairly decent desk, and because I've got my own room. Okay. I'm not sharing with anyone, so basically my desk is a workstation.
It completely covered, huh?
Yeah, so I've got them all daisy-chained via FireWire. One of the bare drives is actually just a pure backup drive. So okay. All my finalized projects and my images and like my iTunes backup, they're all on that drive.
That's right. So you've got to carry everything with you to as though you were at home, right? Because you're how long are you on the ship at a time?
Okay. Basically, this contract is 17 months. I'm 5 months on the ship and then 1 month on land. So, I've got to carry everything with me everywhere I go.
Wow, that's crazy. What other do you bring a headset or anything like that?
I've got a I'm not sure the model number, but I've got a professional Sony headphones. The microphone on the computer's been pretty good, actually. I haven't had to use a headset.
So for doing things like a Skype call or something like that?
Yeah. And actually, funnily, on the ship, I actually tend to use FaceTime more.
Talk to about that. You mentioned that earlier before we were recording.
Yeah, well, on the ship, the transfer rate's very low. I mean, on a bad day, I'm pushing 3 to 5 kilobytes a second.
Kilobytes, not megabytes, kilobytes.
Kilobytes. An email has
trouble. You get to multiply that by 8 to be kilobits, right? So 24.
Yeah, it's when people send you emails with photos. You just are going, oh, I haven't got the bandwidth for this. It's just scary. But, on a good day, I can get up to 100 kilobytes a second. But what I find is when I'm using Skype, because it drops out a lot, the connection, Skype tends to either cut out and not want to reconnect. Hmm. Whereas FaceTime, I've been able to connect a lot more reliably than Skype, which is strange.
You know, I don't know what they've done. I mean, I always thought the Skype algorithms are pretty good. They're pretty efficient over fairly small pipes, but There's something about FaceTime seems to be a lot easier. We were talking earlier about how the advantage of FaceTime is that you don't have to be on, because you have to be on Skype in order to get a Skype call, but you don't have to be on Skype on FaceTime, right?
Yeah, which is brilliant. I just wish that the ringtone was louder. Skype has got this sort of loud, almost obnoxious sort of sound, which is brilliant because you hear it anywhere in the room. But yeah, the FaceTime is just so lovely and lyrical. It just drifts into the background.
I never even noticed that, but you're right. It is just a quiet little happy tone.
Yeah.
Well, now, I thought it was prohibitively expensive to use the internet on a ship.
It is. I'm spending a fortune. I think I'm getting 90 minutes for every $20.
Oh, wow. So How long does 90 minutes last you? A day?
Okay. If I'm being very, very careful, I try and stretch it out over a week.
Oh, my gosh. That's really hard.
Yeah. There are certain ports we go to. Like in Aruba, there was some Wi-Fi I could connect up to occasionally. But certain
You're like a man in the desert who found a fountain, right?
Oh, it's like that. But can you imagine the poor servers? You've got 500 to 1,000 crew all trying to access a free Wi-Fi spot.
Not to mention the people on the ship might too, right?
Yeah, exactly. There's a lot of people trying to access that free Wi-Fi spot.
And you've got a fiancé that you'd like to talk to and chat with, right?
Yeah, she's been great.
Yes, she must be very patient waiting for you to be able to connect when you can.
Well, that is, especially since we're planning a wedding too. So she's doing all this stuff. She just chose a dress and stuff. And so trying to discuss wedding plans is...
Oh, that's got to be hard. I did put the tweet out, and I didn't get any great responses yet about some wedding software, but everything appeared to be online. Yeah. But online doesn't work for you.
Not really, no. I ended up trying out a software called iDo. It's like wedding planning. It's a Windows only, but it runs very well in Parallels.
Okay.
So it runs, brilliantly.
So I got married about 75 years ago. What all do you put into a wedding planning software? Is it just they know to ask? It's like doing your taxes. They say, oh, did you remember to check for shoelaces or what?
Basically, there's certain checklists that you can go through. There's a checklist for the bride and a checklist for the groom, and then one that they...
Yours says go to the bachelor party, wear a tux.
Yeah, mine's, I think, maybe 16 points, and I think the bride's is like 80. It's crazy.
Can she transfer some to you?
Well, that's the whole point of this program. I'm hoping I can actually take some of the responsibilities and work on them myself.
If I were her, I'd be looking for that button that says, okay, make him pick that part.
But it's been great. Yeah, it's a lot of budgeting. And the problem is, because I'm a photographer and do video as well, I'm really picky over who I'm going to choose to do mine.
Oh, yeah, that's got to be. Have you ever shot wedding photography yourself?
I've done it once. Yeah.
That's supposed to be the worst job in the world.
Yeah. I was very fortunate. I was asked as a favor. So they approached me, as opposed to me trying to sell my services and have to deal with the mother-in-laws and the brides. And
you screw up. You never get out of that, ever, right? I mean, there's some stuff, you know, if a kid's first birthday party, okay, there will be a second, but hopefully there'll only be one wedding.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, I'm actually hoping to also do... Some photos in New York after the wedding, because we're getting married in Thailand.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, in a beautiful island called Koh Samui. So we've got a beachside resort that we're in. But I think once we do those ones, we're probably going to get some shots with ourselves with a photographer in New York.
Are you going to be really obnoxious to the photographer, telling him what he should be doing or she should be doing?
I'm contemplating actually asking them for all the raw footage and photos, because... the photographers that I'm looking at look great. I just like having raw.
Because you're going to want to mess with the photos, right? And add those little sparkles and the skin tones and all the filters that you have.
Exactly. Let's get rid of all the wrinkles and make us look beautiful. And with the video side of things, the video guys sound great. There's three cameramen, but I'm really sort of particular about how I like it edited. There's a group called Still Motion that I think are fantastic. I don't think they're in the price range that I can afford, but squirrel.
Oh, Steve, Mr. Squirrel's out here.
Yeah, I put some nuts out.
That's the first time I've heard that done for real. He did it earlier when he saw a hummingbird, but yeah, that time there actually is a squirrel. What were we talking about?
I'm actually hoping to get the raw video footage. Oh. Because, I just want to play with it. And
so will you let them package it up or just give you the raw?
I think I might just get them to give me the raw.
Why pay them to do it? Because you're going to do it anyway, right?
Well, exactly. And it's going to be a lot, though. There'll be three cameras over 6 hours.
Oh, my gosh, really?
Yeah.
We had no video on us at all.
Yeah.
I don't think video was invented when we got married, being 75 years ago and all.
Yeah, so it should be good. I mean, I'll keep looking around. If I find a group of people that I really, really like that are in Thailand, then I'll let them do the work. But otherwise, I'll be pretty picky, I think.
So, that's a good point. Not only are you guys planning a wedding, you're planning a wedding in a country you're not in.
Yeah, exactly. So
is just having to deal with getting up in the middle of the night to be... what's the time zone difference between Thailand and New York?
Probably,
you need to pull up Time Scroller to find out.
Yeah. Well, it's from Perth to New York is a 12-hour difference. It's probably about 8.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's not so bad.
There are some hours you're both awake, right?
Yeah. Well, we deal mainly in emails. That's the easiest way, I think.
Yeah, I like everything better that way. Well, so back to the ship. What other tech do you carry with you? No video camera, right? Because the birds are getting excited out here. No video camera, right?
No, I think the 5D Mark II basically does everything. I am actually going to purchase something called the Z Finder Pro. It's a special optic that you put against the viewfinder to make it actually be more like a video viewfinder. So you can literally hold the camera up to your eye in live view mode, and it's actual pixel perfect focusing, so you can actually hold it up. And that's the thing with 5D Mark II, it's manual focus.
Oh, you're kidding. You shoot everything manual focus?
Yeah. So
that'll put hair on your chest right there.
Yeah, so I mean, it's a great skill to have, and so I'm going to purchase this so I can actually do it a lot easier. But I've got...
Is there anything to take to go the other way around? One thing I was thinking about with Steve's camcorder, he's got the Canon HFS-100. It's an HD camcorder, but it's very zoomed up. You have to back way up to get any kind of a wide angle at all. It's really, really zoomed up. Is there anything that reverses that?
You can always get a... If it's got a thread on it, you can get a wide angle lens.
That's what I was wondering. Would you get a regular camera wide angle lens, or you just through the camera manufacturer if they have that, right?
Yeah, I had the Canon HG10. It's standard definition, but it's a great camera. It had some thread, and there was a... I got a wide angle lens for it, but it was a specific size.
Did that work?
It worked, yeah. Just have to be careful about getting any vignetting and things on the edges.
That's what I was thinking about. You know, I just got the Sigma lens. What did I get? Everybody's heard about it a bunch of times as I talked about it. But it goes to a real wide angle. But it goes it goes 18 to 200. But when I have my flash up and I'm zoomed back in the wide angle, I get vignetting of the flash.
Yep.
And it's just because this lens is gigantic. It gets in the way. So I had never thought about that. But I guess you have to keep those things in mind, all that optic stuff.
Yeah, well, I've got a couple of external flashes which help lift up the flash higher up so the lenses aren't so...
That was the other thing I was going to ask for my birthday, Steve, was an external flash for my camera. My birthday's in 3 days. I like to keep coming. Well, you know, Shy comes over, it gets expensive. Actually, one of the other things I did ask for my birthday was the Photomatix. Is that the name?
Oh, the HDR?
Yeah. Everybody talks about that one, so I need that, Steve.
I've played with that, actually. It's pretty good. Yeah. I actually haven't done much HDR recently, so... But Photomatix looks really good.
Looks like a lot of fun. Yeah. Well, I did promise you wouldn't have to work too much for your dinner here. He only flew through the middle of the night to get here and everything. And we're actually getting close to showtime, so I think I'm going to cut us off unless there's anything else you wanted to tell us about.
No, nothing really. I'm just really glad to be here.
Yeah, this is very exciting. In the flesh, right here with the squirrels.
Yeah, and the hummingbirds. I love it.
All right, thanks, Shai. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks very much, Alison.
So luckily I have Shai here to make a slight correction in his recording. What mistake did you hear there, Shai?
I heard myself say 15,000 workers. Actually, there's only 1,500 contractors on board right now.
Well, 1,500 is a pretty good number, but 15,000...
Yeah, we've got 1,500 contractors and 1,500 crew on board at the moment.
Oh, my gosh.
So it's a full ship, but not quite 15,000.
All right. Hey, one other thing we forgot to do. We didn't have you plug your website.
Oh, yeah. Well, if you're interested in hearing me sing or seeing some of the stuff I do, my website is shaiyamini.com. And,
can you spell that?
Okay, it's shaiyamanee.com.
Basically, the N is not doubled, but pretty much all the other consonants seem to be. All right. SP Sheridan in the chat room is saying, spell that, please. And of course, there is a link in the show notes. Well, that's going to wind us up for this week, Shai. I think that's going to be the end of the show. It was sure fun having you on the show today.
Oh, it's been great. I'm so glad to be here. It's wonderful.
What fun. But we can smell Steve making us dinner downstairs. The onions are grilling. The steaks are on the barbecue, so we better get going.
Yeah, and I've only had plain food all day, so.
Oh, that'll be good. Well, I want to give many thanks to our sponsors for helping us pay the bills. We've got ScreenStep, Smile, and of course, Honda Bob. Don't forget to send in your dumb questions, comments, and suggestions by emailing me at allison@podfeet.com. Follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/podfeet. If you want to have fun in the live show, as we've said earlier today, head on over to podfeet.com/live on Sunday nights at 5 p.m. Pacific time. Thanks for listening and stay subscribed.